I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, senior producer Laurie Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
A little while, we have Molly Katzen, the cookbook author. She's the person who did the Moosewood cookbook, and there's some really great-looking recipes in here. We just tried one, so we're going to do that. But we're going to start with congratulations first to Joseph Lucci, who is executive chef at Marketplace in Danbury, Connecticut. He will be competing on Iron Chef America on the Food Network. More than a million viewers will probably watch when it airs. I think it's going to be late summer. Chef Lucci is 26 years old. He's worked for the renowned Thomas Keller of the French Laundry and Per Se. And I guess it was Keller. He called Iron Chef America personally to recommend Chef Lucci.
Wow.
He's a farm-to-table guy, Chef Lucci. He braises his pork belly in duck fat. So there you go.
Oh, okay. That's what we have to do
to get
on the Iron Chef.
I wonder who's going to compete against.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll have to wait and see, right? Which one of the Iron Chefs he's going up against.
Yeah,
I can't watch. It's so nerve-wracking. I feel so bad for
stress.
Them.
Does the
stress and the pressure come through the television?
It really does. And I think, oh, I can't watch.
I get like that too, but then I have to come back and watch the end where they are actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say that the champions who are the Iron Chefs, they win so often, not just so they can stay in the Hall of Fame. I think they really do better recipes so often.
Huh.
You can just see the tastiness of their ingredients, and then the judges, you know. Okay, so here's another congratulations. Lena DeGenti, who works for the Plan B Burger Company, Bar Company, has just been chosen by the Griffin Report of Food and Marketing, a 2014 Woman of Influence in the food industry.
Yay.
And she certainly has had a lot to do with the success of Plan B.
Yeah.
And she's just a fantastic
congratulations.
Person.
Good for you.
Okay, what do we got, people? Passover is on the way. And I just read in Fine Cooking that Michael Ruhlman uses baking powder in his matzo balls to make them light, you know, make matzo ball soup.
Lighter
and you have the
fluffier.
Matzo balls, and then you have, you know, the chicken broth, and to make them fluffier. That's his ingredient, baking powder. And you can see his recipe in the April May issue of Fine Cooking. And he also uses schmaltz.
That's the key.
Yeah, so this is what many people still don't know what schmaltz is. So he renders chicken wings until they release their fat, and that's what schmaltz is. There's a lie. I get a lot of schmaltz when I make the chicken thighs.
People call me schmaltzy. What does that mean?
Yeah, right. Fatty.
I have to ask my friends what they mean by that. Perhaps there's double meaning there.
I do know schmaltz is a beautiful thing. Yeah.
Stop giving me a lot of schmaltz.
That's what they meant.
That's
all right. Here's what we're going to go to. We're going to go to right now. I read this issue of Fine Cooking Magazine, and they were talking about how to do a twice-baked potato. And that got me thinking about how much fun it would be to do a twice-baked potato party.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, it is the most fun, because what you do, really, making a twice-baked potato is just this. You bake the potato for a while, then you take it out, about an hour, let's say. Then you take it out, and you cut up high, you know, near the top, horizontally, and you take off the top, and then it's cool now, and you scoop out the insides and you put them in a bowl, and then you can mix into that potato mush whatever you want that are flavors that you love. And so at a party, you put out bowls of things, and you give each person the insides of a potato, and they mix in what they want.
Oh, my God.
It's a potato bar.
Yeah. It's really, really fun. And you can have a little bar over there, you know, martini bar. What fun as a party. Just bowl of salad. Well, I put all this online for you, so you can see this
online. It's a great idea.
And it is so fun. So, I mean, it couldn't be simpler to do. And depending on what you put in, if you load it with enough stuff, your potato, then it really is an entree.
Mm.
You know, what difference does it make if you're having mashed potatoes with all these other things? So let's come up with some. I love, my favorite one, and I put this online, is to do a kind of what I call a Spanish version of the twice-baked potato. So I take out the stuffing and put it in a bowl, and then I We have a bowl of Manchego cheese that has been grated.
Oh, yeah.
That's a Spanish cheese. It's delicious. And I toss that into the potato, and I don't mix till I get all my ingredients in. And then I love that Palacios dry-cured chorizo. And so I put that in. You know, I chunk it
that
up.
That stuff is heavy.
Cube it up and throw those in. Then I like a little bit of chive flavor, so I dice up some chives and I throw that in. These are all in bowls for people to pick from. You know, somebody might add some olives to that if they wanted. You
sure.
know, some maybe Niçoise olives or Kalamata, depending on what you like. Or you could just leave it just as it is. Then you stir it up, your potato mixture. I might add just a little tiny bit of olive oil. And stir it up, and then into the potato shell it goes again. One more little grating of Manchego cheese on the top.
That sounds good.
Then potato and all your friends' potatoes, all mixed up, get put down. You have to somehow identify them. You know, you have to tell people, now you're number two in the top row. And in it goes in a baking sheet for about 30 minutes. And your salad is on the table. People are having, you know, some snacks and stuff while you're, you know, in drinks and just having a good time. And then out it comes, salad on the table, twice baked potato platter.
That sounds fun.
Isn't that fun? Huh?
Just the making it would be a blast, right?
Oh,
looking over and seeing what the person next to you is making.
Oh, yeah.
What are you putting in yours?
It's really fun. And you could do this if you're conscious about not wanting white potatoes. I don't know why, because there are minerals and all kinds of good things in the potato. But if you don't, or you prefer sweet potatoes, then you can do this with a sweet potato. And so maybe we should play around with that, because I've never done a twice stuffed sweet potato.
I haven't either, but I've definitely done baked sweet potatoes.
Yeah. So what could we put in the twice baked sweet potato mixture that goes with this, that kind of sweetness?
Flavor.
I think I might dice up some toasted pecans.
Sure. Mini marshmallows.
A little bit
brown sugar.
A little bit. And I put some butter.
M&M's.
Love it.
How about some melted butter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Melted butter.
This is the dessert.
This is the dessert. This is pie.
That could be the dessert one. A little cinnamon, nutmeg.
How about a little bourbon?
Ooh, I never thought. See, the ideas with the white potato are flying in, but I never thought, why not?
Yes. Yeah.
Why not bourbon?
Yeah. And, you know, you certainly could do – I would put bacon in the sweet potato or the white potato. By the way, if you're doing white potatoes for your twice-baked potato, you want to choose a russet potato because it gets nice and crispy on the outside and creamy
on
the inside.
Yeah.
So
best potato for baking and twice baking.
And so you're putting it in once, and then the shell gets hard, and then you put it in again, and then the inside gets hot. So
now, speaking about the shell, how do we eat these things? Can we pick it up with our hands and eat it? Is it a, you know, fork and knife thing?
Everybody does it a different way. Most people start out
with
the knife and a fork.
And then end up with pick
it up and eat
it. And then it's just, you know, depending on, you know, the kind of crowd you have.
So it's whatever you want to do.
Sure. At my house.
Okay.
I love this idea for a party.
Party. Oh,
yeah.
It's so fun.
And it's so simple. It can be inexpensive.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you get expensive ingredients, when you stuff a potato, you don't need a lot of each ingredient.
All right. Let's talk about some mixtures. So we have – I'm going to get a pen and write these down so we
Lobster.
Can have these online for you.
Yeah.
Right, Lori? Okay. So
mascarpone.
I've got the Spanish one. Okay. Lori wants to have lobster in hers, lobster meat.
Mm-hmm.
And Lori, do you want some diced truffle?
That would be fabulous.
Well, I'd like to give you some diced truffle.
My favorite word.
Or if you don't have diced truffle, which can be a little bit expensive, you can get cheaper truffles, though,
about
in a can.
Truffle oil.
How about truffle oil or
sure.
truffle
yep.
salt?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, truffle oil we'll use. And, I forgot, in my potato, my Spanish potato, it has corn kernels. Do you want some corn in you with your lobster?
That would be very nice.
So.
Give it a little sweetness.
Okay. You want a little onion in there? Because
we're not doing
a lobster
roll. Is it cooked onion? If it's cooked
onion,
I'll take it.
I'll give you. You can borrow my chives. No.
Okay. I'll leave out
scallion.
The chives.
No. Okay.
No, thanks.
There you go. All right. So,
simple.
Chris, what would you like in yours?
Oh, they're just flying in my head right now. I'll just start with the classic bacon and cheddar. And I'll take some, and I will take some of your chives.
Crisp bacon, chives,
and cheddar.
And cheddar.
Can I throw one more in there?
Yeah, another potato or another ingredient?
Yeah, another potato. Uh-huh. How about a mushroom? And then I'll borrow some of Lori's truffle oil.
Oh,
right, and we'll put some Parmesan cheese in that
one. Oh,
right.
Okay, that's a good one. That sounds good.
Right, and that'll be a vegetarian option.
Okay, so you see, you need bowls of things. This is like having a taco party,
but you don't need a lot, right? Just a couple tablespoons.
We've
each
got
going into
bacon.
A
we've got chives. We've got cheddar. We've got Parmesan. We've got manchego. We have lobster meat. Mm-hmm. We have truffle oil. We have roasted mushrooms. We have two kinds of nuts. So it's a number of things, but hey, you can have your friends bring over some things. You know, people say, "What do you want me to bring?" Bottle of wine and a bag of pecans.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How about that?
A bottle of wine and roasted mushrooms. Okay, so let's see if we can think of another one on the spot. Here.
Broccoli.
Broccoli.
Okay. Broccoli. Sour. A broccoli. A tablespoon of sour cream in the bowl with the potato, and a little bit of scallion.
Okay, oh, that sounds good, Chris.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's do one that's a little on the spicy side. So I'm going to say chicken with some wing sauce, you know, buffalo wing sauce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Red hot. The number one.
Or Frank's wing sauce. Yeah, so chicken, some buffalo wing sauce.
Yeah.
That would be...
And some blue cheese.
Shredded chicken.
Oh, yeah, the blue cheese. That would make that whole thing.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
That's
crumbled
a great
blue,
one.
Blue cheese,
yeah. Yeah, you could even just put the crumbled blue cheese on top instead of mix it in.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one, Faith.
Okay.
I want that one. I'll trade my broccoli one for half of my broccoli one for half of that one.
Okay. No, wait. I'm taking half of your mushroom, truffle, and Parmesan cheese,
ooh,
by the way.
I don't know if I could trade half of that one for the... Okay, really? That I
for
could
my
for the buffalo. Yeah, because I'm
twice
a
baked potato.
Oh, because of Frank's Red Hot.
These
I'm
better be
for
really
that.
Big potatoes, because I could just hear people
you know
going,
what?
Yeah. Wait, let me try that.
You can get them. They're sized. So you can take some to go into different grocery stores, but you can find some that are like boats.
Hey, so at my party, one potato is enough because you have a big salad, there's dessert, and you know, potato's pretty filling depending on what you load it with. But maybe you want to be prepared to give people two potatoes in case, or you do a few extra potatoes in case somebody wants a half of another potato. So there we go. Okay, now I'd like to try one with sausage, crumbled sausage cooked, and let's see, diced broccoli rabe. And that broccoli rabe has in it a little bit of red pepper flakes and olive oil and fresh lemon juice and lots of garlic.
That's a good one, too.
So sausage, broccoli rabe. Now, I need a cheese. What kind of cheese? I guess maybe Parmesan.
Yeah.
You know, it's already in the bowl over there, so I guess Parmesan. So sausage, broccoli rabe, a little red pepper flakes, olive oil. And so I'm doing the broccoli rabe on the stovetop with lemon juice, tons of garlic, and some olive oil, and then grating Parmesan on the top, mixing it in with the cooked, diced up sausage.
All right, I got a good one.
Yeah.
How about shrimp, andouille sausage, right? So we'll make it like a Cajun one, and spicy pepper jack cheese.
Oh, that's going to be hot.
Right?
Spicy pepper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the jalapeno pepper jack cheese you can get at the grocery store.
Oh, wow.
Some andouille sausage and shrimp.
No, is the sausage hot too?
This could be a good hot one. Yeah.
Okay.
How about one with a hard-boiled egg?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Lori, what do you want to put in that?
I'm thinking about a potato salad somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard-boiled egg.
Yeah. Celery, onion.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like
almost like
salad.
A deviled egg potato.
Yeah.
Thing.
Oh, so a little mustard?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Mustard?
Yep. Gotta have that mustard.
That's genius.
How about mayo, mustard? Else? Is that enough, or do you want a little onion in there?
I think onion. I know you don't
chives.
Like that.
Chives. No, that's
chives.
Okay.
Relish.
Relish. That's what goes in the deviled egg.
Gee, okay. Pickle relish. All right. I think we have created quite a party here. And I would have every person at the party bring one item. Yeah. The jar of relish.
Yeah, sure.
The truffle oil.
The truffle oil. The
roasted mushroom.
The lobster, apparently. Yeah.
I'll supply the potatoes.
Then what would you – you would pre-bake all the potatoes so they're all – and right. Would you scoop them, not scoop them?
So here's what you – before the people come, you take the potatoes, you wash them, and then you put them on a tray in the oven. And you bake them for about an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
And the skin on the outside starts to get a little bit hard. And then you take them out of the oven and you let them sit on a cool surface until they are completely cool. Then you slice the top off horizontally.
Okay.
And not – so you don't want to do it halfway.
Okay.
Because then you've got two sides to, to unstuff. Yeah, yeah. So you just do it the top off, and then you dig with a spoon inside, and you pull out the potato mixture, and you put it in a bowl. And you do that for all the potatoes.
Oh, so it's all set and ready to go.
It's all set and ready to go.
That's
so everybody gets a bowl.
With potato in it.
Yeah. With potato in it. And then, you know, all your mixings are on the table, on the bar, on the counter with spoons, and people just stand and mix away. Olive oil is there. Lemon juice is there. You know, and so if they need to have it be a little more wet or they want more cheese or mixing cheese, they can just have fun.
And you can just go up and down.
Yeah. Now, the problem that we had is identifying whose potato is whose.
I got it.
And so you have to write a little chart before it goes in the oven.
Or put a piece of parchment paper down and get a Sharpie and write on write on the parchment paper. That's Chris's.
That is
Faith's.
Smart.
And that's Lori's. And that's Jonathan's.
Okay.
Right? And then when they come out of the oven, you know which one's yours.
You're done, essentially. And then you put the thing right back in the oven. The tray or trays goes back in the oven for about another 30 minutes. And that's when you just stand around and have some more fun. And then out they come. They're hot and crispy and bubbling on the top. And, oh, what a party that is. Unforgettable as
a party
idea. Got
one more question, though. Beer or wine?
Yeah. Well, maybe both.
Maybe
whatever everybody wants.
Yeah. I could do beer with this, right?
Sure. And and by the way, did you say how easy this was gluten-free?
Yeah.
You know, really, so many ingredients are gluten-free on that table.
And this gets everybody.
Yes.
I don't like this. I don't like – well, you make your own. I'm a vegetarian. I'm a that, right? Everyone makes their own and you're all set.
Okay. How about – I have one more potato, stuffed potato to add. How about what I'll call the shepherd's pie? So if you had steak –
You know,
that you either ground or cubed up or, you know, chunked up and left over.
Yeah.
You put that in a bowl with the mashed potatoes, a little bit of cheese on there, and some and some peas. Mix it in, and you've got a shepherd's pie twice baked potato.
That's awesome.
Isn't that fun?
You know, and even if you didn't want to party, this is a great, like, I don't know what I'm going to have for dinner.
Yes.
Clean out the refrigerator, right? Look, I have leftover chicken. I have leftover this, leftover that, right? Bake a couple of potatoes.
This is another good thing for when you're snowed in and you're just making food out of
whatever you have.
And you have a bunch of potatoes around and whatever's in the pantry.
And the kids are going to love it if you get them in there helping you make it, right?
They're going to love it if you're putting cheese in that potato.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it is possible to do, since they make a mashed potato pizza, it is possible to do a pizza twice baked potato.
Ooh, let's make that one.
All right, so what do we do? We're going to have pizza sauce.
So let's put the pizza sauce in the shell,
right?
A little pizza sauce,
a
little layer in the shell so it's separate.
Okay. You mean at the top?
No,
scoop
out this thing and then spoon in a little bit in the shell.
Down at the bottom.
Yeah, down at the bottom.
Okay.
And then what gets mixed with the potato?
So the potato has to have, what do you like on your pizza?
It's got to have pepperoni.
It's got to, It's got to have, if you like pepperoni, some people like sausage. Okay, so it's got pepperoni.
Yeah.
It has
mozzarella.
Peppers.
Yeah.
Diced peppers that are roasted. It has, mozzarella.
Yeah.
Does anybody want mushrooms on there?
Sure, mushrooms.
Olives.
Oh, God,
you could do anything. Mix in all your pizza ingredients. Now, Ariston Olive Oil Company, which is based in Connecticut, they now make a pizza olive oil.
So that's the one you drizzle on top.
So you drizzle that
little sea salt
on top.
In the oven.
It is awesome,
That's the one.
So, how about
that's a great idea.
Is this the best party
ever?
That's
the kids,
It's the best
party ever. The kids would eat that up. The kids. Night and day.
Yeah, well, you're looking at
you're looking at one of the kids. Move over, kid. That's mine.
I think you better make two potatoes for everybody is what I think. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and we have so much more to tell you about. I had a great time at the Hellenic Snack Bar. And we have Molly Katzen coming on the show, and a great idea to make leeks and cream with Gruyere cheese in a casserole in the oven. We're still in that weather, and this is so delicious. So we're going to tell you about that. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. There are so many hungry people right now. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on The Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
A poke chops and gravy. Yeah. A poke chops and gravy. Yeah. A poke chops and gravy. I want a poke chop with some cornbread.
Yeah. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans not cornbread out of sight. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night, and I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night." Now, that's what beans said to cornbread. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
Beans told cornbread, "You ain't straight. You better wake up or I'll gas your gate. Been in this pot since 2:30. Swelling and a puffing and a almost due. I'll be ready tomorrow night." That's what Bean said to cornbread. Always get mad at me, but I ain't mad at you. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Bean said to cornbread. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. WNPR's content director is Jim Cutie. We thank you first and foremost for listening. On my last trip to the east end of Long Island, I went to a place, you've heard me talk about this before, Hellenic Snack Bar. This is in Greenport, Long Island, on the east end. And it's a relaxed Greek restaurant. And if you're a gluten-free eater, are you lucky? Because Hellenic has now a gluten-free eater on staff, and they're going with it. I mean, they've been there for years and years and years. Suddenly, lots of gluten-free choices marked on the menu, including sandwiches with gluten-free bread. I just want to say congratulations, Hellenic, and it's a smart move because there are so many gluten-free eaters now who can't eat wheat, barley, or rye without becoming very ill. So if you want, and you're at Hellenic, try the ground chicken burger, which is fresh, and the Greek hamburger, which has spices and onions, Greek spices and onions and peppers and all that, served to you on gluten-free bread. So whether you eat gluten or not, both those things are very good.
The population that can eat gluten is getting bigger and bigger.
It is getting bigger and bigger. So it's fantastic.
Something we have to pay attention to.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have leeks very often? I love them, but I don't have them very often. Do you, Chris?
I love them.
But do you find yourself cooking them much?
No, I've never. You know what? And it's funny, and I don't even keep them in my kitchen. But the other day, one of my waiters actually brought in a leek, and it was like huge. It was one leek.
Humongous leek.
I'm like, where did you? He's like, I don't know. I just walked through the grocery store. I've never seen leeks this big. And I bought it, and he made like this fondue-y kind of thing with steak, and he said it was wonderful. He brought some in for us to try.
Wow, that sounds good.
Yeah.
And so the thing with leeks, I think people don't buy them so often because they know it takes some time to clean a leek. There's a little bit of dirt and grit that gets in between all those little leaves that are in this leek. So, but it's not so hard. Chris, you saw Jacques Pepin do this.
Yeah, and it was genius. All
okay,
right.
How are we
going to? It's a little tough to describe, but I'm going to give it my best shot here.
Can I try? Can I start you off?
Yeah, start me off.
Okay. Let's imagine the leek has that long green part.
Yeah.
And then it has that bulb,
yep.
The leaky part at the end.
Yep. And that's the part you use, right?
That's
that
the part,
white part.
That's the best part. And so it has this long green stem that's kind of fat. And in the leaves round up in there, that's where all the dirt hides mm-hmm. when it's growing. So you think, how am I going to wash this thing with all these layer inner circles and circles and circles? And so Jacques says, as Chris, you were telling me about this. Yeah. He says, okay, you have a knife and you have the leeks. You yeah. hold them at the top by the green part.
Yeah.
And you start cutting at the top. You leave about 2 inch of space up there in yeah. the top so they stay together. And then you make a slice straight down and through the bulb.
Yeah.
And then what, Chris?
So it's like cut horizontally through the leek, right? So you have two halves, but it's still attached at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Then you flip it and do that same cut again. So you're like making wedges of pie almost, right? And then you do that two more times, right? So you cut 4 incisions in this leek. And
each time going through the bulb, straight
going through,
down
straight
and through
the leek and through the bulb.
But
and
leaving it attached at the other.
Leaving it attached at
You've
the green
You've still got
end.
That 2-3 inches at top. And
that's
it's still
attached.
So
now it looks like a pom-pom.
It? Okay.
Right?
And then what? Under the faucet
and
it goes.
Then all you do is take it and rinse it and all those layers will come apart. And all you do is rinse it under this faucet and it's still attached at the top.
Yeah.
So it's still whole. And you just rinse it and rinse it and rinse it. You get all the dirt out and then you take that to the cutting board and just slice it.
Wow.
It's genius.
Isn't that the best?
It is.
That is such
genius.
A,
it's like you've
this.
Made a like a mop head.
That's exactly that's, yeah. it. It's yeah. like you make a mop head and you rinse that and it's the easiest way to clean a leek.
All right. Well, here's how to do. I found this recipe in the Cheesemonger's Seasons. This book has come out. And this could not be easier. You just have cleaned it in this ingenious way that Jacques has come up with. And then you have a pot of water boiling over high heat with a little salt in it. And you add the leeks and let them simmer for about, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes until they're tender and a knife pierces them easily. And then using tongs, you take them out and put them on a plate to cool. And you've got an oven preheated at 450 degrees. You have a ceramic baking dish and you coat it with some butter. And then you arrange these cooked leeks in a single layer in that buttered dish. Season them well with salt and pepper. In a pot, you heat up some heavy cream. That is the good part. Some whipping cream, by the way. So it's a cup. A few gratings of fresh nutmeg. And it starts to bubble around the edges. Take it off the heat and pour it over the leeks. And then scatter some grated Gruyere, shredded Gruyere cheese, you know, about half of a package, 4 ounces, on the top of all this. And you bake this in the upper rack of your oven for about 15, 20 minutes. And it gets golden brown on the top, maybe some little almost burnt spots, and you serve it hot. And you've got this Gruyere leek cream casserole. How about that? Isn't
very
that
nice.
Great?
Oh, yeah. My gosh. The flavors of cream and stewed leeks.
Chris, you have made the day giving me that Jacques Pepin tip. And by the way, we have a video posted right now, Diane Worthington, showing you what we've been talking about how to clean a leek in this method that we've been discussing. I guess the point is that these leeks and cream with Gruyere cheese are going to go with so many things.
Cool.
You could have it be the rich counterpoint to a simple piece of fish. And so it's the snazzy thing on the table. You could do another rich thing to go against it and then do something very light for dessert. But leeks are it's like the novel you don't read very often, the classic that nobody reads anymore. We forget about leeks, how wonderful they are. Oh, they're good.
So, I mean, especially in that preparation, right?
Yeah, and if you want to cut back on the cream, of course, you can use a non-fat cream. You could use a low-fat cheese. You know, you do whatever you need to do.
You can do it in chicken broth.
Oh, that's an idea.
Right? Same recipe. Just take out the cream and use chicken broth, you know, and then maybe just finish it with a little pat of butter just to give it that, you know, richness. And it would be just as good because it's the leek that gets all – the leek by itself gets creamy.
Chris, that is a great idea. And also the Gruyere is going to give you enough of that umami, that unctuous quality.
Uh-huh.
And you don't need the cream quite so much. Will the chicken broth give us a kind of sauce that you can spoon?
Yeah, no question.
Spoon right onto the leek. That's a great idea, Chris.
So the leek has become the kale of past. Right? Remember, like, kale? No one ate kale. Everyone's like, ah, kale, kale. Now I can't keep kale in the restaurant.
Kale because potato chips.
Yeah, kale is kale potato chips. And leek has become that, right? Everyone's like, oh, yeah, leeks. I kind of like them, but not really. And I never use them. But we got to bring back the leek.
Okay, I'm with
right?
you
That's
on
it.
That.
Bring back
I think
the leek.
We just did bring back the leek. And they're available all over the
they're
place.
They're always in the grocery store, right?
Yeah.
So somebody must be eating them.
And, yes, and you know, small leeks are best for a dish like this, but if you can only get the giant ones, go with it because they're going to taste just fine.
Oh, you stew them down like that?
Yeah, okay. This is great. And so we're going to be talking with Molly Katzen. She is author of the Moosewood Cookbook. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. What a hit that was.
God.
She's one of the all-time great, you know, highest number of cookbooks sold people. And so she's decided to do more vegetarian recipes, but for a new generation. And we just tried one of her dishes, and it was really fun to have and would be lovely alongside a lot of things. Very fresh at this time of year and tasted kind of Middle Eastern in its way. So it was a wonderful, an eggplant salad. It's the Heart of the Plate with Molly Katzen, who's joining us in just a second. Again, our recipes for twice-baked potatoes, they're all up right now at WNPR.org. Just click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and you will see the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze link. Okay. Please support your local food growers and food makers. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Potato chips. Hi, crunchy, crunchy. Potato chips. Crunch, crunchy, crunchy. A crunch, crunch, crunch. I don't want no lunch. All I want is potato chips. Potato chips. How my mouth does drip. Potato chips. If I don't love you, baby, grits ain't grocery, eggs ain't poultry, and Mona Lisa was a man. Oh yeah! Let's get into it! Listen! All around the world, I'd rather be a fly. I'd light on my baby, stay with my woman till I die. With a toothpick in my hand, I'd dig a 10-foot ditch and run off through the jungle fighting lions with the switch, because you know I love you, baby. Oh, you know I love you, baby, yeah. Now, if I don't love you, baby, I tell you, grits ain't grocery, eggs ain't poultry, and Mona Lisa was a man.
What kind of money? I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search the Faith Middleton Show. All right, here we go. We have Molly Katzen on the show. We're going to be talking about her cookbook. And in this spot on the show, our idea is that certainly you can listen to the show again and again in the archive and hear us talking about how to do these things. But we're trying to, you know, some of you will go out and get the cookbook. We're trying to also inspire you to hear how combinations of things come together to make wonderful dishes. And thanks to these cookbook authors, this is how we know this. So Molly Katzen has done this book, and she is one of the best-selling cookbook authors of all time. She is best known as author and illustrator of the original Moosewood Cookbook and The Enchanted Broccoli Forest.
This is my favorite.
Yeah, this is actually her 12th book, believe it or not. And it's called The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. We made something. We're going to get to that. Molly Katzen, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Thank you, Faith. I'm so happy to join the party, or crash the party, however you
call it. Okay, you have a permanent invitation. Here we go.
I hope you don't regret that.
No, I bet I won't, because look at this recipe. This is a recipe for sweet potato pear soup, and I think that is such a good idea.
It's so good. I hate to brag, but I really do love this one. My original version of it had cream in it, and then I tried it without the cream, and it was just as good. So it's pared down, so to speak.
Yeah, so here's you're in the spirit for this show. I mean, we have orange sweet potatoes, some water, cinnamon stick, salt, 3 large ripe pears, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1/4 cup of dry white wine, some fresh lemon or lime juice, either white pepper or cayenne.
Yeah, a touch of heat is always nice against the sweet. And then the lemon pushes off against the sweet, too, because, you know, with sweet potatoes, they're almost always sweet. With pears, there's quite a variation.
So all this goes into a liquid, right?
And yeah, and it's completely pureed. It is a velouté. It's a puree, and it's smooth, and it's orange, and it's kind of mysterious. If you don't tell people what's in it, they might not be able to guess. They'll be like, I know this is familiar, because pear is so subtle. And, you know, different people have different sweet tolerances. I actually really like tart and sour. So the lemon juice, one of the things I love to do in the recipes at the heart of the plate is to get people paying attention to their own palate. So I say, you know, do it to taste. Not so much with the salt. I think people need guidance with salt when they're cooking. But with sweet and sour, you can play with that, and you can add lemon or lime juice right up to that edge if you so choose.
Well, let's do a salad now from your salad section. I love Caesar salad, and I love kale. I've come to love kale. And so you have created a kale Caesar. That's a wonderful idea.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's one of the – I'm not a huge fan in general of raw kale. I know the raw kale salads have been, like, enormous. But I sometimes like the kale wilted. But in this one, I like it completely raw. It's all in the cut. You have a sharp knife, and you cut the kale nice and thin, make a big pile of it, and make a Caesar dressing, like a classic Caesar dressing. If you're a strict vegetarian, you might not want the anchovy, but I always want the anchovy in there, in the Worcestershire, and the mustard, and the garlic, and then some Parmesan in the dressing, and you cream it up with a little bit of mayo. And it's such a nice contrast to the kale, especially if you use the dark green, the you know, lacinato, a.k.a. dino kale. It's such a beautiful, deep color, like green-blue color.
And when you cut the kale, because it has stems, mm-hmm. and I know once you get to the main leaves, you're chopping, but do you chop the stems and add them in too?
I'm not a big stem person when it comes to kale,
yeah.
unless the kale is super baby kale, like really tiny leaves.
Yeah.
So I like to take my very sharp knife and take the leaf part off the stem part. It's really easy. You hold it upside down by the stem and just, you go whoosh, whoosh, you know, on either side of the stem, and the leaves come off. My stems generally go into my compost. And then I roll up the remaining leaves really tight into a kale leaf cigar and chop it really, really thin.
Yeah. You know what I was wondering is, are kale stems, if you chop them really fine, could you put them in a plastic bag and throw them into soup?
Absolutely. Okay. You just want to be sure you don't impart bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever you're making a soup stock, you just want to be sure that you're paying attention to the flavor of the vegetable as it kind of imparts into the liquid.
Would they be too bitter?
It depends. I would say taste them. It sort of depends on their age.
Yeah.
The kale is freshly picked.
Sounds...
The stems can be on the sweet side, but, you know, everything goes south with age. And so I would, you know, taste them.
Yeah. Okay. I think I'm pulling back that suggestion. Call back. All right. Here's what we made. Chris made this for us. We asked him to. Your roasted eggplant salad with a coconut lime vinaigrette.
That's one of my personal favorites.
Oh, we've enjoyed this, didn't we?
Oh,
this
yeah.
was good.
This was great.
Fresh taste.
So let me just explain the coconut lime vinaigrette. This is so easy. Crushed garlic, fresh lime juice, reduced fat coconut milk, salt, a little bit of either agave nectar or sugar, and some grapeseed oil or peanut oil. Just mix it all up, and there you go. You've got a coconut lime vinaigrette doing that. It's vegan, it turns out. And now, to make your roasted eggplant salad, what do you use?
Roast an eggplant. If it's a small, tight one, you don't need to peel or pre-salt. Just chop it up, roast it in a 400-degree oven, which is a wonderful way. You kind of shrink the eggplant because the juices evaporate out, and then it becomes even more of a sponge in a good way. You know, it'll absorb that dressing beautifully. When it's done being roasted, you toss it with the vinaigrette. It's a great summer salad, even though I know we're talking in the winter now. You can get these vegetables in the winter, too. In the summer, the cucumbers are just so heartbreakingly wonderful. You mix it with cucumber, sweet bell pepper, and if you can get them, cherry tomatoes, and then fresh mint. And you toss it with that limey, coconutty vinaigrette, and the eggplant just absorbs it. And it's not, you know, it's not that it's soggy, it's just flavorful.
Yeah.
And one of the things that keeps people, I think, from using coconut milk is you the awkwardness and frustration of opening up a whole can of coconut milk and you use like 3 tablespoons, and then what do you do with the rest of it? It doesn't keep that long. So what I do is I take that leftover coconut milk and freeze it in ice cube trays and then put them in a, you know, freezer-worthy bag, plastic bag, label it. And then the next time you need 3 tablespoons or however much, small amount, cooking it, but just pop out one of the cubes and you got it.
That's a great tip.
You know, it's funny because we were saying that last night when we were putting this together. And one of my guys actually said, I'll take it home and make a smoothie out of it.
Oh. So resourceful. Right. So resourceful.
But I like the ice cube tray thing.
How many of us have thrown out how much coconut milk over time? You know?
It's so true.
Yeah.
All right, great. Thank you for that. And by the way, even though that is, in your mind, a summery dish, at this time of year in the winter, I am ready to get some tangy flavors going, something that perks up my taste buds because I've been reveling
us,
in these these stews and
breaks
you
us
know,
out of
casseroles
that, right?
And yeah, and it starts to move me in the direction of spring. So that was a great bridge.
Wonderful.
For the season. Let's do your onion pakoras. These are chickpea flour, so these are good for gluten-free eaters.
Exactly. You know, chickpea flour is a star in the gluten-free world. You can do so many things with it, and you can. It's pretty readily available. I mean, you can get it in any kind of Indian grocery store and more of the kind of supernatural grocery stores, I like to call them, or online. And you buy a big bag, and you can keep it refrigerated and, you know, closed up tight so it keeps, so it doesn't go bad. And it just makes this wonderful batter. I'm sure many of you, I know you guys have, many of your listeners have had pakora as an appetizer in Indian restaurants, you know, the little tidbits that are coated in a batter. That batter is made just really simple from chickpea flour and, you know, moistened down with water and a little bit of spice sometimes.
Yeah.
And in this case, I have mustard seeds and cumin seeds and some crushed red pepper in the batter. And then you just cut onions into these random squares, you know, maybe an inch by an inch. Doesn't have to be perfect square. And just sort of put the onion in the bowl full of batter, stir it around. And it's so fun because it's so imprecise. Lift it out by the spoonful. And saute it. You know, there's this continuum of deep frying at one end and politely sauteing something at the other end. But this is, you can get a pretty crisp result if your oil is very, very hot in a good skillet. And each pakora has enough room to get contact with that oil. It doesn't have to be an official deep fry situation. Get them really crisp. And the way I have them in this book, the way I have them kind of organized in the book, is that I have a series of stews. And each stew gets a hat. We accessorize our stews. And
so you have an onion pakora.
Oh, that's great.
The pakora is a hat for a curried stew that's got cauliflower and carrots and cashews and a yogurt sauce.
Here's what I'm thinking. If you're a gluten-free eater, just having this on its own is great. But you could make two of these in a fairly large size, as in hamburger size or sandwich size, and make a phenomenal sandwich with these onion pakoras, I think.
They're not only gluten-free, they're also vegan.
Yeah. Okay, that's a fun one. Really fun.
Chickpea flour has protein and fiber. I mean, it's kind of a win-win. And yummy, we can't forget that.
So tell me about this mushroom popover pie.
This one's been really popular.
Oh.
Well, people already love their vegetables. Great. But if people need to kind of be invited in further to a vegetable-eating life, we like to put the vegetables in a context that makes them feel cozy and, you know, like they haven't given up too much. And one of the most beautiful backdrops for vegetables, I know this sounds like it's too good to be true, but a popover batter type of thing, like a Yorkshire pudding batter, equal parts flour and water and then eggs. And just as we dumped the onion into the pakora batter, we've got mushrooms in this one combined with a popover batter. And then it's baked in just your regular cast iron skillet goes right into the oven. And it makes this big puff. And you cut it in wedges. And it's a wonderful delivery system for mushrooms, which people who don't think they love vegetables pretty much love mushrooms. And so it's a really
yeah,
nice thing.
Yeah, and so good for you.
And when I was testing recipes for the book, my editor was testing them too. And she made this one. But for her husband, she also made lamb chops. And so the next day she called me and she said, we didn't eat the lamb chops.
No kidding.
That's quite a compliment.
Very validating.
Mushrooms can feel like meat.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's pretty interesting. So a kind of popover pie with mushrooms in it. So what's in here is butter, minced onion, domestic mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, minced or crushed garlic, salt, dried thyme, pepper, eggs, milk, and a little bit of unbleached all-purpose flour.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure how you could make this one with a gluten flour and get any kind of rise out of it. So I think we'll have to declare this one not gluten-free.
This is no GF one, no.
Yeah.
Many of them are.
Yeah, here's one, which is savory ricotta muffins.
Mm. It's so fun.
So let me say the ingredients, and then you tell us how this is done.
Okay. A
couple tablespoons of butter for the muffin pan, whole wheat breadcrumbs, 8 eggs, a cup of ricotta, preferably whole milk, a little bit of salt, some minced scallions, black pepper, and grated or shredded Parmesan.
And you make the batter, and you bake it in whatever you would normally make muffins in. You put these in muffin cups and bake them, and they come out at freestanding little adorable units. Not too tiny, so it's like it could be a breakfast. A couple of them could even. They're portable, and they're good at room temperature. You can even pack them for lunch.
Can you freeze these?
Yes. You can. You know, you get the texture will go a little bit spongy, but it's still very pleasant, very delightful. And if you are a gluten-free, back to gluten-free because it's so big right now, and you have a bread that you love that's a gluten-free bread, and I'm not that familiar with them, but I know that there are many good gluten-free breads out there. Those breadcrumbs could be made from your favorite gluten-free bread, and then you're good to go.
That's good, and they make breadcrumbs gluten-free. So if you just want to buy those, that's fine.
Excellent.
That's fine, too. This is Molly Katzen, who was author of the Moosewood Cookbook, and she's got a new one out called Vegetarian Recipes for New Generation. Its title is The Heart of the Plate. And what I like about those savory ricotta muffins that you just discussed is if people are coming over for brunch and expecting some kind of eggy thing, what a wonderful way to put out muffins that contain eggs that do the same thing, except you've got a muffin. So you've got your egg, your muffins, all of your dairy in one little vehicle. I'm crazy about corn cakes, and then I'm even crazier about buttermilk corn cakes. And you call these fully loaded, so I cannot wait to talk about this.
It's a delivery system for all the good vegetables and fiber, because what you're going to do is you're going to cram into that buttermilk corn cake batter corn, whole corn, jalapeno, red bell pepper all minced up, black beans, scallions. You can go further. I mean, that's the kind of basic, but you can keep going and like just keep adding vegetables till they kind of fall out, you know.
Yeah, you could.
And you want to top it with something really, really interesting. Like if you take a little bit of, you know how the chipotle chilies can come in, packed in adobo sauce in a can?
Yeah.
And just take a little bit of that. It's very spicy and smoky. And you kind of mix it with some sour cream or creme fraiche and let it ripen for a few minutes, let the flavors develop, and then put a dab of that on top. And you just have this creamy topping without too much of it. You know, just smoky hot.
Chris, let me ask you a question. Because this recipe is cornmeal and calls for all-purpose flour, and these are corn cakes, so there's not a big rise on these, do you think you could substitute for the all-purpose flour, a gluten-free corn flour?
Yeah, I've done it before.
Okay.
I've done it before here where we've taken the flour out.
Yeah.
They come out a little crunchier, but they're still just as good.
Yeah, so that's how that recipe becomes gluten-free.
Yeah.
Well, Chris has been teaching me that corn flour is either a flour or a grain, depending on how they set the grinder. Mm-hmm. And so the corn flour can act like any other flour. Always it's the issue of the rise. But here are these cakes, and they don't have to rise so much. So that's exciting for gluten-free eaters. So tell me, when you look at Moosewood, back at Moosewood, and you look at how you've modernized, you know, our ingredients and stuff, I have to say there's a big difference, isn't there?
There is. But, you know, it goes back and forth. It's so funny. When I first wrote the Moosewood Cookbook, which was almost 40 years ago, and we are putting out a 40th anniversary celebration edition in the fall from 10 Speed Press, I wasn't thinking at all about... First of all, I was 22. What did I know? I wasn't thinking about, you know, calories. It's just like, oh, let's put in a lot of cheese. Plus, though, you know, vegetarian anything then was pretty fringe. People were concerned about, oh, my gosh, what will happen if I have a meatless meal? Will I survive? And mothers of my friends were worried their kids would be keeling over from a vegetarian meal, let alone lifestyle. So I packed the rich ingredients in there to help convince people that it would be enough to have a...
Yeah, that was pretty smart. That worked.
It was like, don't worry, you'll be full, you know.
Yeah.
I realized, you know, we can't have that much heavy stuff.
I don't know how many times I made that mushroom barley stew. It was
that
amazing.
That has remained exactly the same.
That was so good.
Oh, thank you.
And if it was leftovers, I'd give it to my dog, who had a giant head. And the dog would eat every single thing except the lentils, and there'd be
hilarious.
A little pile of lentils at the bottom.
Wow.
Hey, thank you, Molly. Thanks for being on the show.
It's been fun. Thank you.
You're welcome. Molly Katzen has done this book, The Heart of the Plate. She is the former author of Moosewood Cookbook, while still around. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show and see the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze link. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.